This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello and welcome to what you are listening to, the weekly mashup with your girl, Candace Mama. Unfortunately, T's not here with us today, but we are sending him love and light. However, fear not, I've compiled a phenomenal panel for you to listen to today. And the first is Cliff Central's very own comedy extraordinaire, the founder of The Worst Guys, Mr. Mark Mdluli.
Oh, yeah. What up? Yo, Mark Mdluli in the building, co-hosting with Candace Mama.
How are you doing, Mark?
I'm very blessed. How are you, Candace?
Good.
Yeah,
oh man, the Zoom conversations just want to be all up in our vibe.
Hey, I can see this guy wants to be in your DMs. I can see him.
Yeah.
Look, he's even hopping in the studio.
He's completely trying to slide into my DMs right now.
Talk about sliding into DMs. We were having a conversation.
Let me actually first get KK involved.
All right.
KK also had some strong opinions on that.
Yeah, he did. He did.
So, second on the panel is entrepreneur, author, and Mount Kilimanjaro conqueror, KK Diaz, hello.
Hey, everyone.
How are you doing?
Wow, the environment and just the energy in here.
I'm sorry, KK. It's so funny. It's so funny because, you know, we've got such a great lineup for you today, but it's as soon as Mark and KK were together, a debate came up of who should pay on a date.
We're just actually having a heated debate in the Cliff Central Lounge.
Yeah.
And I, as a feminist,
that I didn't bring that up.
Yeah. I, as a feminist, well, actually, Candace, you say that the men should pay.
Men should pay.
Okay, but I genuinely believe that it should be equal. We are in an equal society where if the woman asks me out, she must pay, because she's then deciding what the date's gonna be, where we're gonna go. Next thing she says, let me take you on a date to Paris. Now you must pay. How is that
firstly
fair?
Can I meet the woman who wants to take you on a date to Paris?
No, because if you I could. Meet her, I'm taking her away and I'm running to an island. And we never meeting anybody. I'm keeping her.
Because so, I've never asked a man out.
My thing is,
whoever's
initiating, you know. You
okay, no, but how do you feel as a man, right? If now we out on a date, now the bill comes. Mm. Now, if she asked you out, are you going to start dropping hints? Are you going to be like, so thank you so much for...
No, I just expected to grab it. Like, I expect myself to grab it if I asked her out.
Yeah.
And look, I have no shame in asking how we're going to settle whatever.
Yeah.
Really?
We don't have a general. So if somebody asks me out on a date, I'm going to assume that, you know, they want to pay.
Yeah.
So I will lead with that. Yeah. But if there's a problem, like, I do it all the time.
Let's
if
be honest problem, with each other.
You know, if there's an awkward look in the eyes, you know, I'll pull my card or my wallet out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
like,
if there's
I just
that awkward
run with
moment.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, to avoid the awkward moments, yeah. I'd pay. No, I wouldn't. Why am I lying to myself?
I work with the awkward moments. That's what gives you, you know, the lead in terms of whether should you be.
Yeah, that's what gives you power, actually. Yeah. The honesty. Working with that, like, hey, lady, listen up. This is the situation, all right? I'm a young comedian. It's tough out here in these streets. So, how are we going to do this? I'll do the chips, you do the burger.
Honest.
You have to be.
I'm a young comedian. Money is tight.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think a lot of women will take that and actually run with it. I have to tell you.
Okay.
Because I'm that kind of person who before I'd be like, okay, cool, you know, let me reach for my purse. Because, man, you guys have a funny way of getting into our heads, right? You guys have these little conversations amongst yourself in front of us, like, you know what, I need a woman who can do this and do that, and woman these days. And then, you know, you had us feeling a little guilty for a while. So I'd reach for my purse. Like, I'd see the bill and I'd reach for my purse. But then I was like, this is definitely not
so me. Men are just providers and protectors.
You
and
are proving these... you can provide.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Okay.
So you need to prove it. So I just want to say, yes. For me, if I ask to meet with anyone, like I did this morning before I came through to the studio, I asked a client of mine who pays me on a regular basis. They needed my help. And then I offered to meet with them before I came through to the studio, and I paid for the breakfast.
Oh, okay.
So it's isn't client different?
Like, isn't business different? Like,
for me, it's about a relationship regardless.
Okay.
At least for me, it's about if I initiate, you know, it's a standard for me.
You sort it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think in business, like as a woman, I don't mind if I'm asking you to a business meeting and it's a restaurant, then I don't mind paying because it's business. It's not about you being a man trying to court me. But if you are trying to court me and you expect me to pay, hi, no, it's not going to go well for you.
It depends who's asking.
No, no. Because I could have been flirting and agreeing to the time.
Yeah.
But if you're going to look at the bill like it's a foreign object.
I think you're like, right. If somebody does ask you out, I think.
Yeah, if they ask you, then yeah, they have to. If they don't, they're a fuckboy.
No, but women have a strange way of asking out. So like, you know, women ask out in a very subtle
in
way.
In hints.
So you can't actually have said that we asked you out because we were hinting the whole time. We were all like, oh, it would be so nice to see you.
You see, this is the thing. Women actually have better game than men by like miles.
We will never say meet me at Mug and Bean at 12. No.
Alright, cool. So it's just about who's the man and who's the woman at the end of the day. At the end of the day, we are different people. And we have to treat each other.
Precisely. Like, no woman will ever expect a man to carry a baby. You know what I'm saying? It's just different roles, people. Know your role. That's all.
Cool. I'll take that.
Let's launch into the conversation we were supposed to be having
Let's do that.
So today, I put on my Facebook and I wanted opinions on, you know, the whole millennial thing. Because millennials, if people don't know, is anywhere between, if you were born between 1980 and 2000, you are considered a millennial.
1980 and 2000?
Yeah, that's a big gap. I think they kind of just increased.
How old are people who have been born 36. In 2000? 16 years old?
Yeah, so 1980 would be about 36, and then 2000, they'd be 16.
16, okay.
Yeah, I think they just made it. Yeah, I think we just expanded the gap too much.
I don't think I'd listen to anything a 16-year-old has to say.
I was born in September 1979, so I'm turning 37 this coming
Saturday. Oh, damn, you just missed the millennial era, so you've got opinions.
I did.
Yeah, at least we've got opinions from each side.
From the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
But can I tell you what people have been saying? So I just took like, you know, a lot of data and I compiled it into the status. And it basically says that millennials have been said to be the lazy and entitled generation. A group of people who are constantly demanding, yet are rarely ready to put in the required work to reach their goals. So that's number one. And then Time magazine labeled millennials as the me generation. So what do you guys think about this? Like,
millennials being the me generation.
The me generation.
The whole me idea, I think, is only exposing itself now because of social media and the internet and our ability to manifest an idea of who we are in another space. Because on Twitter, on Facebook, you can create this
persona.
I think it would be what you'd want to be or what you see yourself
like
as ideally. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So that, I think, is the reason for the me ideas, just because we're more aware of what people are actually thinking.
And
now
we almost overly available.
Yeah.
You know, we're available on every platform.
You know too much about what's going on in my life that you think I'm
we
trying
overshare.
To tell you about me.
Yes.
No, it's just, this is what was happening before. I couldn't really tell you about it unless you came to my house for coffee or something.
True. Yeah. But KK, what do you think? Because I think I think it's kind of unfair because in a lot of ways we were created to be this way.
Yeah.
Because we started with a mixer generation when I was in primary school. I started
mixer was the shit.
Be right back. We almost had a little more decency with mixer because you tell someone you wouldn't blue tick them.
Yeah,
by the way,
Worse. Yeah, there are no blue ticks there.
Yeah, you'd be like, I'll be right back. You know, even if you're going for 5 minutes, I'll be right back. I'm leaving my phone. You know,
I'm L2Ming right now.
I'm listening to music. You know?
We had it all.
And then right after that, Facebook came along. And all of a sudden, we had a platform to express ourselves even more.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Facebook, Twitter. Right after Twitter, Instagram. So it's almost like we were created to be this generation where our lives have always, since our formative years, been out there to be consumed by everyone. Mm. So what do you think?
So, you know, I've worked with... I'll separate myself. I won't call myself a millennial,
with that
right?
Yeah.
I've worked with those people.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have a feeling we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong when people are confident and they feel that they need to negotiate their own future, you know, for their own careers.
Mm-hmm.
But I say let it be an equitable exchange. If you're going to say this is what I want, then you know, put in the work.
Okay.
That's just my feeling, and I don't get the, you know, the feeling that
we're willing to work.
Yeah, yeah. I think
I must
think
agree
a
with
disconnect.
That.
Yeah.
I think there's a disconnect there. We or millennials, you know, want things to happen quickly. They want other people to get things done for the. That's just my feeling.
Okay,
yes.
Can I just
interject
on that? Yeah. I totally agree with that because when I think about
in
my peers,
in terms of the hard work,
yeah, in terms of the hard work and what people want in comparison to how much effort they're putting in to get it,
that's
a big disparity. Just amongst my peers, I can see it. There's an idea, and I think this is what social media has done as well, where you can portray yourself as this thing. You'll see people's bios as actor, motivational speaker, philosopher. But
aren't we all?
Aren't we all? This is just the shit you want to be,
but
it's not the what you're actually doing on your day-to-day basis, on your day-to-day grind. So that's what I think separates those. I mean, that's what exposes millennials as lazy and not hardworking, because at the end of the day, we have to realize that I don't think it's necessarily a generational thing, because most people are lazy and unsuccessful.
Yeah, for real.
Yes,
big talk and very little action.
Most people want to be something, but they're not there.
Exactly. I wanted to actually interject there and say, playing devil's advocate, would it just be said that with us, the millennials, it's just that we've got more platforms to showcase our sense of entitlement, if there's that word. Yeah. Whereas with other generations, they just didn't have the platform to do so. So it's just that we're under a microscope, right? Because we're on Instagram, Twitter, whatever. And our every movement is almost like in a fishbowl. Whereas generations before us didn't have that. So they could lie to their peers. They could lie to their friends. like, you know, they could bump into like that guy, the school paparazzi, and be like, and say, hey, you know, life is good. I'm driving a Benz. I'm doing this. Yeah. Because he knows, like, he'll just go spread the news in the community. You know what I'm saying?
Let's not forget that about 80% of people couldn't have dreams about 20 years ago. Maybe it's just all
just
too much at
real.
Once. Yeah, I mean, I think there's like, now we're just hearing everybody's dreams and visions now that we have it. Like,
look,
like, shit.
I also want to add and say, in as much as all of this, all of these platforms are available for, you know, for the current generation, I'll say current in inverted commas, you know, the whole YOLO, the whole fear of missing out, is creating an environment where a lot of us are depressed because of what we're seeing others become.
I agree with that.
And that is actually killing us.
It.
You know, they say our generation is going to die mainly from heart disease-related, or rather heart-related diseases.
I can see that.
Because of depression, because of unhappiness, and so on. And so we're kind of killing ourselves in terms of just how we're abusing the platforms.
Have we also become ungrateful? Because I feel like what social media does is that it creates an ungrateful mindset, because no matter what you have and what you've achieved, it always looks like someone else has better or has more. So therefore, you never take time to say, you know what, I'm good.
Yeah.
Instead, you're thinking, oh, this is not good enough.
Yeah.
Is that the mentality?
We're a lot clever, but I think we're less wiser. Because we've got so much to work with now, but we just seem less wise about it. I mean, the Stats SA recently released some stats. And, you know, one of the most disappointing stats was that the youth right now in South Africa are less capable, less literate than their parents.
But would that be fair to blame the youth? Because I feel like since I've started school, I mean, I don't know how many times it went from OBE to like different educational systems, whereby the government almost sabotaged the hopes of the youth, because we went through so many systems to go through.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know what my brother, we're only 4 years apart, but what he studied and what I studied was so different. And now the pass rate is what, 30%?
Yeah.
Like all you need, it's not even, like how would you like a doctor operating on you with only 30% knowledge?
Like, all I'm saying,
30% chance of surviving.
Yeah. What I think is, you know, in that category of youth, you know, there's the 35-year-olds, there's the 33-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
I think that age group, or rather that peer group, has so much influence, or the ability to influence what's happening to the younger generation or the younger ages of millennials.
Yeah.
We're just not influencing the situation. We're not doing enough.
But can I throw in a spanner there?
Sure.
Wouldn't you say our music? Our music is becoming the biggest problem in our society.
Yeah,
because,
for example,
hip-hop, right? You listen to a hip-hop track, and I'm not talking about your conscious rappers like your Kendrick Lamar's. I'm talking about, you know, your everyday feel-good jives.
Yeah.
So that music is kind of, what does it tell you? Oh, I'm young, I'm rich, I've got women.
I don't have to care.
I don't have to care. YOLO, you know, you only live once.
Can I just be the devil advocate on this one?
Yes.
Throw the spanner in the spanner.
You definitely, the YOLO thing has come out just because I think people are more and more aware of how life short really is.
Yeah.
Like I've got a big YOLO attitude, right? This is my day-to-day living is to live as if I'm going to die today.
Okay.
And maybe that is across the spectrum a millennial issue.
Yeah.
Maybe we should think about tomorrow and what we're going to eat.
I'm like, maybe that's the problem.
Maybe that's the problem. Yeah. So the reason why I think this way is because it's the truth first and foremost. I think we need to understand that it's the truth. And we kind of changing the narrative of what it means to be alive.
Okay.
I think the world is going through a conscious shift in consciousness. We're not thinking in the same ways.
We're not living to die.
Yeah. We're not thinking of the same way, 9 to 5 to pay my bills and then die. I want to, like, in an ideal society, I see work lasting 3 out of 7 days of the week. And it's only 5 hours of the day. That's like you become
like
more
that.
Productive. You have more free time than you have work time.
Yeah.
So people are kind of being, the youth has seen that people have been so constricted and so bound by
and
all
unhappy.
The pressure and unhappy. So I think that's why there's this eruption of, you only live once, do whatever you want. Otherwise, you get caught in the crap.
I don't think millennials are any happier.
Okay, I wanted to say, because I think, I mean, I'm a millennial and I'm also an observer of my peers. And I feel like sometimes we're trying so hard to look happy that we're not actually being happy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've been to so many social gatherings, but it's actually a great event and I'm enjoying immersing myself in that event. But people are watching it through their phones because, I mean, if it's not on Facebook, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I go into... Goodness, I don't know how many girls I've unfollowed because I'm so sick of selfies. Like, I mean, I cannot look at you, same head tilt, different top every single day.
Yeah,
like, can we just... And then, like, the status has become, oh, I'm loving myself. But are we truly loving ourselves? Or do we want the world to love us?
Because I don't think so.
If that picture gets only 10 likes or you still have names under your Instagram post, it's like, eish.
Okay, I think this is our biggest dilemma now is that we have to kind of think of ways to genuinely make ourselves happy.
Genuine connections.
And not pretend anymore.
Yeah.
And social media gives you that front.
Yeah.
This is the guy that I want to be.
Yeah.
Remember.
Well, this is the guy I am to you.
To you. Yeah. This is the image I want in my head, in your head when you think about me.
Yes.
But now in terms of genuine happiness, I think that's a difficult one to tackle because everybody's seeing other people look happy.
Yeah.
And... You can't really tell on the internet if somebody's genuinely happy.
Because we can literally edit our lives.
Yeah.
Right? We've become the best.
I can tell
in person.
Yeah.
Meeting genuinely happy people is a blessing in your day.
It's really like,
oh my God, you love life too. High five. Bro, I've been looking
and
for people
isn't
like
funny
you.
When you meet like Instagram or social media happy people and then you see them in person and they're like, ish, you know, how are you doing? Oh no, you know, hey, I just need 50 rand petrol. Okay,
traffic,
you better speak to someone else.
Yeah. So the question I want to ask is, it's been said that millennials are a lot more aware of themselves and of the world.
Okay.
And that, you know, millennials are pursuing purpose and happiness. So, you know, again, how real is that? You know, I mean, in our conversations and in social settings and so on, are we really speaking to purpose in the context of what I believe purpose is?
You know what? I actually think that we are chasing a lot more than we were back then.
Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, look at myself and Mark. We are in radio, for example. You know, this is not a platform that a lot of people would pursue because it's not necessarily a lucrative platform or it's not a platform that seems to be, like it's not a doctor, for example. It's not a brain surgeon. So I think a lot more youth are pursuing things that actually they assume will make them a lot happier.
Mm.
I think where the trap comes in is that sometimes they're pursuing fame and notoriety more than they're actually pursuing purpose and passion, you know, because it's such a different dichotomy because everyone in the world thinks that money and fame will make them happy. And so they get money and fame and they realize that, whoa, this is even worse than when I was broke.
Yeah. Money's a byproduct.
You know?
It's a byproduct, but it's not, I don't think we're pursuing purpose and passion as much as we should be.
And so the reason why I'm asking this, it goes back to the initial stats that you brought about around millennials and feeling entitled in the workspace and the work environment is because that's what they're looking for in the work environment. However, a lot more companies don't necessarily have purpose.
Yeah.
And so you find that the young employees don't necessarily connect with what's happening in the business.
They can't marry the vision.
And so there's a lack of passion and a lack of connection. And so You see, there's no performance.
This is that shift in consciousness I'm talking about. Yeah. There's been a barrier where, and it's, you can see this like the Pretoria Girls High thing where people like, children should be battling these types of battles. No, they are the exact people who should, because they're more awake than anybody else. They don't have the history to distract them. They're like, whoa, but this shit is fucked up.
And all of a sudden there's a voice, right? Because a voice that hasn't been heard. Because we discussed this in last week's show, whereby we were saying that it's almost like, before, it used to be like when you're a black child in a white school, it's like, hey, just be grateful you're in a model C school.
Stop complaining.
You're a white kid.
You join us. That's kind of
hey, you're with the white kids. At least your accent is going to be dusted up when you leave.
Speak so nicely, Mark.
No, I learned English like everybody else and I just did it really well.
Wow, you're so articulate. Oh my gosh, you're not like the rest of them, hey? So, so, you know, that used to be an honor. It used to be like, you didn't just get your matric certificate, you got your accent with it and used to leave into the world and be so happy.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden we're like, hi, that's not enough. Yeah, we are in Africa. I mean, it's our hair. Like, what are we supposed to do, you know? So it's a voice. We are becoming more conscious. So I agree with that.
Yeah, there's definitely been a break away from the old. Mm. And we need to be ready for change. Just because it's different now, just because it's instant now. Mm. I mean, we are in 2016. We're kind of living in the future. Yeah. And we're still in a place in history where we haven't made the leap yet.
Can I throw in someone's opinion on Facebook, actually? Yeah. So what he says is, what seems to be happening is that us, hashtag us, the entitled millennials, are actually just more outspoken about our whims, concerns, and needs.
Yeah.
I actually do believe that millennials are very hardworking, even and especially behind the scenes. It would seem that we are expected to be seen and not heard. So I find that to be very interesting, because I think what he's saying is very true in a lot of ways, in terms of we are the generation that all of a sudden it's not enough. Like, we're not being told. We're not just sitting back and expecting and accepting what we're hearing. We are now saying, no, it's fine. You can finish speaking, but
there's a voice that needs hearing.
But as long as you are willing to hear me in return, we will be just fine.
Sure.
You know, because you can look at the Fees Must Fall movement, right? Everyone was like, before the Fees Must Fall happened, everyone was like, you know what, these kids, they're so entitled. They think everything's going to fall on their lap. And then all of a sudden they were like, okay, fine, we're going to protest for what we want.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, they've lost their minds.
Yeah.
Like, these damn kids have lost their minds. They just want everything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, like, we sometimes stuck in a position where we don't know what people want from us, because there's this thing where we the leaders, we the change, we the future, but also respect all the old traditions, respect what your elders are saying. No, don't challenge the status quo. When we challenge the status quo, then we become even more problematic than when we are quiet. Yeah. So
I just want millennials to back up their talk.
Okay.
I think that's ultimately
that's all I'm asking for.
If you want something, show us that you're working for it.
If you want it so much, back it up.
If we protest, let us come up with possible solutions.
Yes.
Don't just protest
and work
and say,
hard.
Hey,
okay, study.
You guys must solve it. Yeah,
study. Like, stop protesting when you're not even passing your modules. Okay, keep quiet. Sit down.
Exactly. That was one of the biggest problems we spoke about on the West Guys show. That like, about 60% of students actually end up failing.
Yeah.
So what do we do if education is free and half of the university is failing? What are we, where are we going to...
But can I also say that, have you noticed that people don't appreciate free things? Like, we start taking it for granted.
Exactly.
If you're not investing in it, we're going to take it for granted. So I'm not for free education.
Sure.
I just think there needs to be subsidized education. Yeah. I think it's different. You need to earn your place, you know?
100%. Yeah.
But can I ask something? And Mark, I want you to also jump in here. But KK, it's actually a question for you. Why is it so hard to get a mentor as a millennial? Because I find that I reach out to so many people asking them, I'm not asking for all of your time. I'm just asking maybe 30 minutes, or just allow me space in your environment to just observe and learn.
Yeah.
And I find that it is so hard to get someone to just be like, okay, like, I'm not asking for anything. All I'm asking is to shadow you.
Yeah.
And it becomes very much like, you know what, I worked my butt off to be here so you can too. And it's like, why are we hating? Like,
so, you know? So I mean, I agree with the fact that it shouldn't be difficult, you know, as black people especially, I think we've got so much work to do.
Yes.
And helping each other, you know, if we work collectively, you know, we'll get there faster. So the solution, which I always mention during, you know, whenever I do a talk, is, well, firstly, that creates an expectation, or rather a responsibility on the other end when you ask someone to be there, to please for them to be your mentor.
Yeah.
So my piece of advice is, do not ask. Right? Okay. Buy them breakfast, buy them lunch.
Okay, but how do you get them to breakfast and lunch?
You call, right? Because it's what you're saying is, it sounds like you're in a position where you can have a conversation with them. That conversation, you know, instead of you asking them to be your mentor.
Over the phone.
Say, hey, you know, I've got something I'd like to ask you.
Okay.
Can I buy you lunch?
Okay,
can
so change your approach.
Change your approach. Make that a regular thing is, hey, when are we having lunch next month?
I like that.
I think the thing with that is that there's a lot of skepticism because of this. It's a catch-22 because the problem is there are so many lazy millennials who want things that they're not working for.
Sure.
So as from a mentor's perspective, I would imagine is like,
they don't
is
waste
this kid's going to waste my time right now? Yeah. How do you know that this guy is the real deal? How do you know that he's going to follow through all the way to the end?
Yeah.
I think a mentor is more of a natural thing than something that you go fishing for.
Yeah.
If I'm talking true mentorship, I'm talking about somebody who's going to come to you, who's very much like you. First and foremost, they have to be like you. They're going to come and you can meet on less than formal occasions. They'll come to your house. You'll go chill, have a drink, do whatever, listen to the same type of music and discuss different things. I think a mentor is more of a friend who's
made
the same, who's in the same line of business like you, bro.
Yeah.
You doing the exact same shit I was doing at your age. Let me actually show you where I made my mistakes.
Pitfalls.
And it's not like you're not going to make mistakes.
I think maybe sometimes we put too much pressure on mentors, right? Because you've made it. Now, all of a sudden, I think after your mentorship, I should make it automatically.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying is true in terms of your mentor. There needs to be different types of mentors in your life.
Yeah.
You know, not everyone can be dedicated to just your existence and your being. Mm. You need a mentor for your business life. You need a mentor for your relationship life.
Sure.
You know, every aspect of you, because there's no one human being that can fulfill every role in your life. And not each and every one of them needs to dedicate hours on end. Sometimes it's just by observing them live their life that they become the biggest learning tool for you.
Yeah, I think there should be a natural connection.
Yes. True.
That's all that is. Otherwise, you'll always feel like you're forcing yourself on a mentor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let me buy you lunch, please. I promise this time.
And this time your pocket is so long.
Yeah. Two things I'd like to add.
Yes.
Firstly is, you know, people need to feel value in them making their time available to you. So you need to create that value proposition for them to actually be there for you.
I like
that. And then secondly, please mentor someone else. Don't be selfish and just want a mentor. And if you want to give as well.
Oh, I like that.
Or rather, give first. You know, find somebody that you can mentor.
I like that. But with that being said, I find that a lot of times, for me, I always tell people what saved me were books. And I find that some of my best mentors were in books. They were characters that I'd never, you know, that I'd conjured up in my own mind.
Harry Potter.
Obviously. Hello.
He's the guy.
Hello. And Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist, you know.
Yeah,
so there are many
books
for me that have really navigated my path in life. But with that being said, I find that people just don't read.
Like,
are we no longer the reading generation? Don't we read anymore? Our books even worth, you know, purchasing anymore.
Yeah, well, for me personally, I love reading. I think all of us should be reading, especially black people. Let's read.
Black people.
All the world's secrets are in books. We could take over. I promise
you. I swear, if they actually heard paychecks in books.
We'd be in there. Because, I mean, like, I want to talk, you said you read The Alchemist.
Yes.
As well. That was a life-changing book for me.
Yeah.
Just because it gives me a different perspective, a different idea of what it means to live a good life. These type of things you don't find in ordinary conversation.
No.
And the thing about writing and reading is that you tell stories in a way that cannot be said in everyday conversation.
Yeah.
And you understand things differently once you read it to yourself and understand that this was also another person's
An interpretation.
Yeah, an interpretation. And how you use that in your life will always apply. A lot of the times words that people say don't really apply to your daily life and how you act.
And sometimes you can think back on a book and be like, that's where.
This is the thing you're talking about.
Exactly. But Keke, you an author.
Yeah.
You wrote a book called The Climb about you climbing Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
So you are releasing that book on Amazon as a tribute.
Amazon already, yeah,
as a tribute to the late Gugu Zulu, who was a great man.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the book. What inspired you to sit down and write a book? Especially to a generation that doesn't seem to be purchasing or reading books.
Sure. So firstly, let me say this quote I like that says, you know, rich people have got big libraries and poor people have got big TVs. So we need to choose which route.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Preach,
right? And
the
it doesn't have to be a physical bookshelf or library, but, you know, we've got virtual books now.
Yeah.
So knowledge, you can't buy that.
What do you think about the virtual platform of reading? Is it really, does it bother you when you think about your book sales competing with people who are online? Are you, do you have a product online for people to read that is similar,
or
do
the they Amazon have to go one, right? to
the Amazon one? You can read online there.
Yes, you can.
I see,
that's the Kindle version.
Okay, so in terms of the two compared, would you what would you say is more beneficial to the reader?
So
the
here's
buyer?
The thing, right? I always teach myself and others to flow with the tide, right?
Mm.
Number one, if I'm a struggling writer or young person from the township who's trying to, you know, to get themselves out there, i.e. put out a CD, put out an album, put out a book, you know, don't I want to go with the most cost-effective means that are going to help me get to market quicker?
Yeah, true.
Right?
Which would be online.
Right? I mean, you're looking at about printing 1,000 books. That would cost you around 50, possibly around 50 rand a book. That's 50,000-60,000 rand.
And trying to publish is also not easy.
Yeah. If I go digital, I don't need a publisher. I don't need to print a single book. You know, my book as it is without printing, I just need a book cover that I can get done on Fiverr or a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
And I put it up on Amazon. It's up there. Right. So I need to,
adjust.
I need to adjust or rather think, be smart. Do I want the pain that comes with having to raise funds
to publish
and get the hard copy printed, or do I just want to put it up on Amazon?
But would it be more worth it?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Would it be more worth it as that young guy to print the book, to go through that effort to make a hard copy? That's essentially what I'm trying. Which platform is the best? Are we just moving with the times, though? The internet is
at the end of the day, it depends with your situation.
Okay.
You know, some people have got access to funds that may help them to print a couple of books, which is always a good idea because people still want to see
a hard copy.
Even if it's just 10 or 20 that you keep with you for display purposes, right? To take your selfies with.
Yeah.
Right? but here's the thing. If you look at the stats now, the digital platforms for books is rising at an astronomical rate.
Yeah.
And what, I mean, we are the kind of generation that wants things instantly. And that's what the digital platform allows.
Yeah.
Right? If, cool. you know, I know if I come across a book, if you tweet something or I see something, I want it now.
Yes.
You know, and I can quickly read the book or a summary of the book, whatever the case is. You know, I think that's more aligned to the way we consume content and just other things in as far as 2016.
Let's go back to the original of... Yeah. What actually inspired you to write the book?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people go through incredible life experiences who don't seem to put it on paper.
Yeah.
So what was the inspiration behind the book? And give us just a brief summary of the book.
So again, as a business coach, I come across a lot of people who want to start their businesses and those who are struggling to grow their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I share advice you should do this or you should do that, everybody's like, yeah, but KK, you've been doing this for so long.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then I said, look, then I'm going to prove you. I'm going to prove it to you that the principles I'm teaching, I can apply in areas that I don't have experience in.
Huh.
So I chose climbing Mount Kilimanjaro as a metaphor for a big goal, whether in business or in life.
Mm.
And I said to myself, I'm not going to use my own money. I'm going to go out and look for money in the same way that entrepreneurs...
You would for business.
Exactly.
Huh.
And the whole idea was to prove that point. And in retrospect, when I came back with 5 principles. And then as a coach, I also have coaches. Two of them actually suggested I write a book. I didn't have an intention to write a book about it. The book that I had in my head back then is the one that I'm publishing now in November.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so I was requested to write a book, it was suggested. And because I get bored easily, in December, in December, over 3 weeks, I wrote the book and I completed it.
In 3 weeks. That's unbelievable.
In 3 weeks. I have to mention that with everything else that I do in life, I did get help. Andrew Miller, a good friend of mine, who's also helping me on this book and, you know, a lot more books that are coming through later. I wrote as much as I could. I gave it to him and, you know, he put it in human language for me.
How do you find the crowd is when you pitch them a book or you tell them that I'm an author of this particular book, do you find there's a different response maybe across the generation line, across the color line? You know, are people more responsive in a certain demographic than others?
Of course. You know, people who are a little more exposed to you know, to education and information. People who want information that's going to help them grow versus information for purposes of entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, they are more receptive of it, and it's very unfortunate that, you know, when you look at the numbers, black people don't respond as much as I would like them to.
It's especially sad when they see it's another black person, you know, they're like, they're like, but, I don't want it. Don't you just want to give it to me? You're like, exactly. How am I going to make money?
True. And here's the thing, right? About books as an author, as a person out there. You remember what, 10, maybe 15, maybe 20 years ago, when you considered the idea of a business card and you pulled out a business card, do you remember how you felt about yourself?
Oh, you were so proud.
You know, and how it made the other person feel about you.
Like you're professional.
Right?
It's like kind of what websites are now in books.
That's it. Exactly. That's the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, if you really want to progress in life, if you really want to put yourself out there, you want to be a thought leader, you want to be known as somebody who's making waves, I think consider writing a book, you know. And so there were all of these different reasons that inspired me and motivated me to write a book, but I'd always wanted to put my thoughts on paper because I think I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things.
Yeah. Don't we all?
And so
isn't writing like, wouldn't you want to write a book after you've done a whole lot of things, as opposed to writing a book
like
when you're very young?
Yeah,
even if it's not an autobiography, I think writing is obviously experience, a journey that you've gone through that you've now got the experience
the
to share with people.
You're right, but there are books on quotes, right? Mm. You can put out a book that where you're quoting, you could quote your friends about things they say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
it could
that's
be
clever.
A book on questions.
Candace's new book is going to be on quotes. Available on Amazon soon.
Or it could be a book on questions that you have.
Yeah. Oh.
It does not necessarily have to be about something you've done. Yes, that's kind of what we expect. But think out the box. Yeah. You know, I know a friend of mine who's got a book that's like literally it's 20 pages and it's...
What?
It's, this is what, A5?
Yes.
Yeah, it's A5 and it's about 20 pages.
But there is a book actually, I'm sorry. The author's called Paul Arden and his book is literally like a storybook for adults. It is the coolest book.
Nice.
And I think it's called, it's not how rich you are, it's how rich you want. It's not how successful you are, it's how success. It's not how good you are.
Yeah.
It's how good you want to be. Mm-hmm. And in that book, it just literally gives you like storybook examples.
Yeah.
And only when you're done, when you finish it at an hour, you're like, wait a minute. What was that?
This is some bars. This is some
But he gives you literally, throughout the whole book, all he's doing is selling you a single concept and giving you examples about that concept. Mm. But it keeps you gripped. So I agree with you. You do not need to necessarily write about your life.
Yeah. I think writing is crucial just because you get to express what is happening. I think as soon as like Frank Ocean is my favorite musician, he says, when the ink dries and the pages turn to dust, so will we.
Oh man.
When we can't
like
explain
that.
What's happening in this life, I mean, that's when we've lost it all as a society. We need to be able to tell each other stories, even if it's stories that not everybody's experienced. Yeah.
But isn't it important to tell our own stories?
Yeah.
Because I find that especially as black people in South Africa in particular, our stories are getting lost through time because we're not putting it on paper.
Yeah.
And until it's memorialized in ink and people can actually see it and read it and have access to it, our story will always be told from another person's perspective who did not experience our history.
Yeah.
So and I think it is important.
We're the best storytellers as African people. We originally the original.
No, but isn't that our entertainment?
Wherever
you go.
That's why we're killing the hip-hop game.
Like, let me just tell you this. Like we can make a whole story and scenario based on going to the shop.
I went to buy bread. Bread.
And the special sound effects.
Yeah. And then this guy, pa 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 pa, he just comes in. We actually the best storytellers. It's just that we're not taking the time to sit down and put it on paper.
Something that will live forever.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, since you're here, and I'm a young businessman, I wanted to ask about this whole business card idea. Is it washed? Is it outdated? Because I mean, I have business cards and I hand them out, but nothing really happens. And I feel like an idiot sometimes when I say,
you spend so much money.
Here's my Facebook page. That's where all the real information is, because that's where all the real shit is. That's where you can find out that we do a podcast on Wednesdays at 2. You can find out about our comedy shows at Giles. My business card has my name and my email and my number. It's like,
remember what you're trying to do is you want the person you're giving the card to or the message to actually come back to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want them to come back to you. Now, not everybody is a is a Facebook fanatic.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Right. And I will also highly recommend that get the basics done. Get a business card. It's kind of what people expect. Mm. Right. Yeah. It'll help you get over that mental hurdle that people would typically have, or the opinions the negative opinions that they'd have when you don't have a business card.
Yeah, this guy.
So get the business card, and make sure you've got all the basics in place, your website and so on. And I also want to say, it's always better to get the other person's business card.
Yeah.
You must get their contact details.
Right? Because the likelihood of you contacting them for their business is higher than them contacting you for what you need.
And you need to actually contact, the average is you must contact someone up to 7 times before they buy from you.
Huh.
And you need to nurture. You need to nurture the relationship.
Build a rapport.
Build a rapport. Not just once, but 7-8 times. Sometimes, in some cases, the people you meet will only buy from you in the next 12 months.
Yeah. Well, but that's a golden nugget right there, because I think a lot of times if you're trying to sell a product or you're trying to sell yourself as a person, especially in entertainment, we forget that these human beings are actually, they need a relationship in order to do business with you.
Sure.
So we just like, as soon as you get the information, you're like, oh, by the way, could you please do this or send me that or do this? And then they're just like, nah, you were another 20 people that want the same thing. But when you have a relationship, they invest in what you want.
That's exactly what you need to establish and build. Your aim should be to build relationships and nurture, not to sell.
I love that.
Yeah. I think that's the instant gratification that we were talking about from the millionaires specifically.
Yes.
And then I think that's where we suffer the most, is that we expect that after the first time I ask you, I should get
10 years it used to be like that. But now there's 100 of you guys. There's 100 of me.
Yeah.
So how do I differentiate myself? How do I stand out? You know, when the need becomes very active and the pain is so much that the client needs to solve it at one particular point, who do they think they are going to go back to?
That is so true.
It's
the person they've got a relationship
top of mind as well.
But how do you handle getting rejected by those people? For example, setting up meetings for sponsors, which exactly is my thing that I'm going through now. Yeah. And I've kind of built a rapport with some of the people that I've been talking to, and they'd say, for example, no, we're not looking into this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Should I keep pushing the same guy who's said no now?
Yeah.
But I mean, businesses, especially big businesses, if you want a big business to invest in something that's relatively smaller where they don't need you, they have the funds, they have the money, they're just saying, we're not convinced, essentially. So does that mean that I have to keep on going like, hey, but...
So what you are, I mean, I love this conversation, you're raising questions that we help our clients in as far as the sales process is concerned. And we always say that the only reason a client will not buy from you when they actually have the pain is you haven't created the impression and you haven't delivered the value proposition that speaks directly to their pain. That's the only reason.
So they need to feel like they too are benefiting from this relationship and that they're not doing charity.
Exactly. I mean, remember, it's about if there's 10 of us asking for the same money, the only person that's going to get that money is the one that creates the right impression, that gives that ensures the funder or the buyer that they're getting the most out of buying from that, from me.
Yeah.
Can I just, sorry, Mark, I just want to know. So, I mean, a government is punting entrepreneurship.
Mm.
Everyone's saying, oh, everyone should become an entrepreneur. But the pain you just spoke about is what people have to go through, but no one wants to address that. So how do you, I mean, when people ask you about entrepreneurship, especially in townships and in rural communities where it's actually really needed, how do you address that?
You probably saw my face change, right?
Yeah.
This is a very sensitive topic for me. And I do not like the idea of government making us believe that they know what they're doing when it comes to entrepreneurship. Because how do you teach someone about business when you yourself have never had a business?
Woo.
How do you do that?
Damn.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's true that you know, in the less privileged communities, that's where it's needed most. But even less is happening down there.
Mm.
It goes back to reading. It goes back to mentorship. It goes back to all of these points that we are talking about, and we are doing
nothing about it.
Yeah, we're not doing enough to go back there. You know, even if you've had right now, you could teach 10, 100 kids about what you know about business.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's inserting that idea
that
you as Mark, in the capacity you in right now, you can still do more than you think you can do.
Exactly.
Because all of us, don't we all feel like we need to reach a certain pinnacle of success in order to give back and to help?
Yeah. So, and again, sorry, I'm emotional about this. I'm not even sure if I'm answering the question.
No, please, no, go.
But what we need to do, I think we need to be real about the problem we have, that, you know, I mean, in the government space, the education department is not even speaking to trade and industry. My mother is a teacher at Soweto, right? Yeah. I asked her 2 weeks ago because my next book is predominantly around, you know, business development. And I said, "Mom, what are you guys doing in school with the kids?" And she says nothing.
Oh.
They don't have a syllabus for entrepreneurship.
Damn.
Worse than that, in schools you don't learn about financial management.
No.
You don't learn about taxes.
Yeah.
You don't learn about the things that make people successful in life. And the thing that makes people successful is how to manage your money. Yeah.
But then again, it also comes down to the very basics that our government system is failing at, and that's even teaching us our own history as people, as human beings.
Yes.
So if you can't even relate to the context of the education, then you can't really learn the supplements to that.
And then just going back to where we started. Yeah. That idea of entitlement really disappoints me, because by feeling entitled, we don't do anything.
Oh yeah,
we leave the work to the government.
Oh yeah,
imagine
it's easier,
if,
right?
It's easier, and it's the lazy approach, and you know,
well, why would I pick up a book when I can just wait on government to come give me a speech?
Yeah. Or why would I grow my own food when the government?
Because it's going to subsidize my eating.
That's the whole thing that our society is facing now, is the ability to do things ourselves. We are very much able to do things ourselves. Yeah. We don't need to rely on the government.
We can meet our own needs.
We can meet our own needs easily. And I just wanted to ask you, what would that young kid in the township who needs to get out of there as best as he can.
Yeah.
What is the first book other than yours which you should be reading? Like, because access to books, I don't know how easily accessible books are for people in the township. I'm sure there are libraries. I've been to libraries.
Yeah. Can I add to your question? Yeah. Not only is another book. Okay, so number one, the question Mark asked you is, besides your own book, which is The Climb, guys, The Climb by KK Diaz on Amazon.com. So besides your own book, which other book would you recommend? And do you donate your own books? Do you give schools access to your own books? Because not everyone's going to be able to necessarily go on Amazon or access your books.
No, sure. I sponsor my time. I give away my time, and I'm always reaching out to corporates, you know, to sponsor books, to sponsor time, you know, in exchange for me being able to go out and go to the less privileged schools, less privileged communities, to share my experience with them. So that's the one question. Which book, you know, I'm actually confused. I'm not even sure where to start.
Yeah.
But what I can say is it depends what you are trying to achieve in life. And if it's about business, even if it's about life, because business is both about customers and, I mean, about sellers and buyers. The Capitalistic Nigger was the phenomenal
Capitalist
book.
Nigger, yep.
Right.
Yeah.
By our very own African brother.
Because it speaks to you know, how we can grow as a community. So even as a customer, right? It starts to make you see that if I support my own, you know, we grow together.
Yeah.
When I was, I think I was probably 8 or 9, my mother gave me the first book I read as my own book was Animal Farm.
Oh, yes.
You know, and that's another book that was just phenomenal for me.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of books that I believe may be too much for youngsters.
Yeah.
But it's... You know, because I read them a little later in life and it made sense. They made sense for me. But those two books, I think maybe start there. And it's important to look, you know, on listings in the library based on your interest.
And your own needs.
Yeah,
sorry,
needs.
Guys, the show's coming to an end. So I want you guys to punt. And I want you guys to tell people where we can find you, what you're up to, who wants to start.
Yeah, let me go so you can finish off.
Yeah.
Let me press up on the board. Yo, my name is Mark. Right? We got a show on The Worst Guys right here at Cliff Central every Wednesday at 2 o'clock. My host, Ria Betwisisele, is always with me. And it's always hot and fresh. 2 o'clock on a Wednesday. Everything else you'll find out there.
And where can they find you on Facebook?
Facebook, we're The Worst Guys.
The Worst Guys.
Twitter, we're The _ Worst Guys. And Instagram, we're just The Worst Guys, one word. Just The Worst Guys, we're there.
Find The Worst Guys, because they are The Worst Guys, and they will keep you laughing.
I'm so happy to be here. Guys, thanks for the energy, for the opportunity. I'm KK Diaz. Look for me, kkdiaz.co.za. That's my website address. Twitter is kkdiaz_SA. And go to Facebook at A-Game Business Coach, or just look for KK Diaz. And
awesome.
I'm happy to have been here.
Yeah, don't forget, guys, to get KK's book, The Climb, which is out right now at Amazon.com. And then your other book is the
A-Game Business Blueprint. go on my website currently, kkdiaz.co.zn, just download any of the existing ebooks. We will then contact you with when the next book launches.
Awesome, guys. And don't forget, go on KK's website because he does give away free stuff. Because you know we don't like free stuff.
Yo, Mark, you as well. There's a sales book there for free. So jump on
there. Grab it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us once again. And we will see you next week. Love and light. Bye.
Peace.
Oh, yeah.
This is CliffCentral.com.